Historians will tell you that the summer of 1964 was an especially volatile time in the American South because of the growing civil rights movement. But a new film from Sam Pollard called Two Trains Runnin' documents lesser-known events of that time, how two separate quests to locate a couple of Delta blues legends converged on one tragic day during that Freedom Summer. It opens today at the Metrograph, and I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Pollard to our show today, and congratulations on that very nice review in the Times today.
Thank you very much, Lenny. Thank you very much.
You've directed films about the blues and films about the civil rights movement over the course of your 30-year career. Was it only a matter of time before you would combine the two?
It was, as some people would say, kismet. It just seemed to come out of the air. About 3.5 years ago, I met a young man, a producer, writer named Ben Hedin, and he had this idea. He wanted to do a documentary that looked at the search for Sunhouse and Skip James, two blues legends. At the same time, he wanted to tell a story of what happened in 1964 in Mississippi.
And this film includes a lot of coincidences. And some of them almost seem hard to believe because they were happening so close to each other. How much did you know about them when you started working on the film?
Well, as you just said, I was very, very versed in the civil rights movement because I'd worked on Eyes on the Prize. But I didn't know, even though I knew the music of Sunhouse and Skip James, I didn't know about this sort of trajectory where one group of young white guys from the West Coast and one group of white guys from the East Coast both were searching for these two iconic musicians.
Without knowing that the others were doing it.
Didn't even know it. And then the fact that the day that they found those guys was the same day that Chaney, Schwerner, and Goodman went missing.
Hmm. Well, this was the time when the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was organizing in the area. Were they working separately from Martin Luther King?
Yeah, they were part of the struggle, part of the continuing civil rights struggle, but they were considered young firebrands, SNCC, at the time. And the two young men who were at the head of this big Freedom Summer was Bob Moses and Dave Dennis. Mm-hmm. Two very, very powerful men who are still very active today.
I had the great honor of having Bob Moses on the show some years back. How much progress had been made by the civil rights movement up to that point?
Well, as the history has told us, Dr. King had, there had been the Birmingham situation, there had been Little Rock. Dr. King had went to Birmingham in 63 to try to break down the walls of segregation. The four little girls had been killed at the 16th Street Baptist Church, and they had just passed, the Civil Rights Act in 64. Next year they would pass the Voting Rights Act. So there was some progress that had been made. It had been incremental.
But the film also makes the point that it was important that white people were getting involved.
Well, the tragic thing about this country sometimes is that, when a white person something happens to them that's horrific, the nation's ears perk up, their eyes open up.
So there's the death of Goodman and Schwerner that really made people pay more attention.
Exactly. So, Bob Moses and Dave and others in SNCC and COFO, which is another organization that was down in Mississippi, they knew that if anything happened to some of those young white college students who went south, the presses would start to roll.
Let's hear something from a White Citizens Council member in a scene that you've included in the film.
It took the left wingers and the integrationists 58 years to get the Supreme Court to change its mind and reverse the separate but equal concept. But I'm sure, ladies and gentlemen, it won't take us that long to reverse the Black Monday decision. In fact, it won't take us that long, my friends, to change the Supreme Court of the United States.
Was that Ross Barnett, the governor of Mississippi at the time?
It was Ross Barnett, who was governor from 1960 to 1964. And he was a symbol of the feelings about, the fear of integration in America.
Now, the civil rights movement must have seemed quite remote at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, when Phil Spiro, a radio DJ and computer programmer, decided that he and a couple of friends would go down south to locate Sunhouse. Were they aware of what was going on?
I think that Phil and Dick Waterman and Nick Pearls and even the guys from the West Coast, Bill Barth and Henry Vestine and John Fahey, they may have heard some news and read some papers, but they weren't focused on it. They were just focused on the search for Son House and Skip James.
Nick Pearls, by the way, his parents owned a gallery here on Madison Avenue, one of the important art galleries at the time.
Yes.
But he, like a lot of other young men of that time, fallen in love with country blues?
You know, there's something about the quality of that music, the primitive nature of that music, the feeling that you're going back to the soil, that in the early 60s attracted a lot of young white college students.
How long had it been since anyone had seen Son House?
I don't think anyone had seen Son House since the late 30s. He had done some records, like Skip had done in the 30s, and it didn't sell well, and he just disappeared.
And so they were going on pretty much a wild goose chase.
Exactly.
They had no idea where to even start looking.
It was a hunch. A hunch that didn't pay off.
How did Phil Spiro manage to find a car? Could he even drive?
He couldn't drive at all. So he needed someone to figure out how to drive. So someone had mentioned Dick Waterman. Hmm. And Dick Waterman, he approached Dick Waterman about, you know, driving, going down, and then they needed someone else, and they found Nick Pearls, you know. So it was this motley crew of guys heading south.
Well, it's scary just to hear about a few, the trio of Northern Jews setting out in the deep, deep south in a VW bug with New York State license plates.
Well, I don't think they realized how scary it was till they got there. And then there's a segment in the film where they're with Robert Wilkins, another great blues master, who's helping them on the search. And they come up on some southern white guys, and they think there's going to be some problems. But Robert Wilkins was a man of strong personality, and it didn't happen. But they were afraid.
On the other hand, when they approached black people in the fields, it was hard for them to get any information. Everybody was frightened at that time.
Because, you know, they were northerners. They had a different accent. They had a different walk, a different look, and it made people wary.
And you mentioned that young white students who were coming into the area to register voters were told not to go out after dark.
You had to be careful. They had told them also that if you were a white student, you should not be in a car with a black person. You know, you had to be careful to do any of those things that would be considered, you know, that would bring out any hostility.
My guest is Sam Pollard, whose latest film is Two Trains Running, which opens today at the Metrograph at 13 Ludlow Street off of Canal Street. He is the Academy Award-winning director, producer, and editor of a number of films, including the PBS civil rights documentary Eyes on the Prize.
Just a correction, Oscar-nominated.
Oh, okay. Well, you should have won the Oscar. I'm giving you the Oscar. Do you have any idea of what led to this renewed interest in rural blues by white folk revivalists at the time?
You know, they had been listening to the folk music, you know, people like Pete Seeger, you know, and Woody Guthrie, and then someone, you know, Folkways put out a series of records at that time, which played some of these old music, the old blues, Robert Johnson, Mississippi John Hurt.
Columbia put out an album of Robert Johnson, and suddenly he became a superstar after he had been obscure for so long.
Huge. And it was just something about the sound of the voices of those musicians, like Mississippi Fred McDowell or John Hurt or Son or Skip, and the way they played their instrument. Every one of them had a unique voice.
And we were talking about the local guys, MIT in New York, but John Fahey was kind of well known at that point. He went in search of Skip James, and he was from Berkeley, California.
Yeah, he was a West Coast guy, and he was a blues aficionado. He was a real musician, I mean, and he had a very good reputation. And again, for him, the blues was the water that he needed to bathe in, you know, to find himself.
He was developing an appreciation for people like Mississippi John Hurt, who experienced a revival at that time, and also
Booker White. Yeah, Booker White. Booker White. If you've heard Booker White, he was a strong, direct musician.
And those musicians were now performing at folk festivals.
Yeah, they had started performing at folk festivals in places in Boston. And in 1964, after Son and Skip were both located, they, along with, you know, Elizabeth Cotton and Bucca White and all these other great blues musicians were a big part of the Newport Folk Festival.
And you mentioned Robert Wilkins, who's since become a minister, so we see him today, but also there's footage of him in the past?
Yeah, if you go back and if you look at some of that Newport folk footage that was shot, there's footage, you see footage of him. That's his son now who's performing.
John Wilkins is singing That Will Be the Way to Get Along.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything comes together in June, on June 21st, a specific day.
I know. It's wildly unimaginable, but it happened.
I don't want to spoil anything for people who are about to see the film, but did the Fahey and Spiro groups know about what had happened to James Chaney, Michael Schwerner, and Andrew Goodman?
I think only afterward. It wasn't while they were on the search, but only afterward. And I'm not quite sure how much it resonated with Dick and Phil maybe a year later, because they were so on this mission to find these musicians. That's what they were. That's all they were thinking about.
And if they could find those musicians, again, I don't want to spoil things, it was going to have to be through weird accident. The Delta blues music would not only enrich American folk music, but it really had a strong influence on British rock for years to come.
Just listen to the Stones, listen to Cream, listen to all those British musicians that came over across the pond. They were all touched by the blues.
Can an argument be made that music can sometimes be a forerunner of politics? I'm thinking of, for example, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who was a gospel singer but very much in the blues tradition. She had a very strong impact on Elvis Presley, who recorded some songs note for note from her recordings. Johnny Cash, whole bunch of other country singers, they were influenced by these black performers too.
Well, you know, that's sort of been the history of this country. I mean, if you go back to Chuck Berry, and then from Chuck Berry to Pat Boone, the music, African-American music, American music, the American roots music of the blues, has been sort of the foundation of much of America's music, you know.
What do you make of the fact that many recent events kept popping up as you were working on this film? Did you see them as links to the past, that you were documenting?
You know, as a documentarian who's worked on many historical films, I've seen that history constantly repeats itself. And in America, where the issue of race has been a part of this country's DNA since its inception, it will constantly repeat itself. So in some ways, I'm never surprised. In some ways, I'm saddened.
And in your film, Bob Moses, the leader of Freedom Summer, asks, how do we get the country to take a good look at itself?
That's the question, you know, Len, that we keep asking all the time and every day.
The film is opening today at the Metrograph at 13 Ludlow Street. That's right off Canal Street. And my great thanks to Sam Pollard for coming by to talk about Two Trains Running. Are you working on another film?
I'm working on a couple of documentaries that will hopefully come out next year, one about race in America and one about the wonderful Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay, I'm looking forward to speaking to you about both of them.
Okay, thank you.
When a poor boy got all he had, and he started on down the road, started on down the road. Got all he had, and he started on down the road. Got all he had, and he started on down the road. And that'll be a way to get along.